Welcome to On Demand with Jenna Ellis. This is our AFR exclusive podcast where we talk about issues in culture, theology, politics, and do more of a deep dive than we're able to do on the radio side each and every morning. And as we've talked about quite extensively, and I think this topic isn't going away anytime soon, is the definition of the family and all of the constellation of issues that go along with that. And one of them that a lot of pro-life advocates have focused on most recently has, and this has been an ethical question for decades, has been President Trump's focus on IVF or in vitro fertilization as a way to help infertility and the ethical concerns around that. And often when we talk about the concept of infertility, the focus is so much on the parents and the couple and obviously the woman who is infertile, because even though we also talk about the fact that the left would like to say that, you know, homosexual couples are quote unquote infertile, that unity by definition cannot create a child. And so that ends up often in commodification and child purchase. And there's a whole a host of problems in that area that we actually addressed last week with one of my good friends, Seth Gruber. If you missed that, you can go to AFR.net, listen to the On Demand podcast from last week. But one of the main focuses that Christians should have when we talk about IVF, when we talk about the concept of the family in general, when we talk about children, really needs to be the focus and the emphasis on the child. And especially when we're talking about IVF, what is ethical when we're talking about creation of embryos, which is a creation of life when sperm meets the egg and there is conception, whether that is naturally, you know, through sex, or whether that is in a petri dish, that's still a creation of a life and it is still God-given. And when I was looking around X, as I often do, I came across the profile of a young woman named Hannah Strage. And her story is just really remarkable and really influences the way that I think we need to think about this topic. And she shares that she was the first adopted frozen embryo in the world. And so she was frozen for 2 years before she was born, after her biological family created 32 embryos through IVF. And she is here, she says, because she was given a chance at life. And so, Hannah, I'm so grateful that you came on the program today and that you are now a social worker, that you are now an advocate for life, and you're talking about your story and the opportunity of being given a chance at life, but millions like you, as you mentioned, are still in storage, frozen and waiting. So let's first start with your story. How did all of this come about that you were the first adopted frozen embryo in the world?
Yeah, thank you for having me, Jenna. It really started with my adoptive parents really just wanting a baby. And so IVF was offered to them, donor egg and donor sperm were offered to them. And with my mom, Marlene's diagnosis of premature ovarian failure, they were like, we really don't want to grow our family like we would a car, with all of these options of hair color, IQ, all of these different things that fertility clinics offer to couples. And so my mom was like, do you have any embryos we could adopt? And their doctor was like, well, yeah, I have tons of embryos. And then kind of handed her a list. And she's like, this isn't how we want to grow our family. We want an actual adoption. So with a family friend, they kind of came up with the Snowflakes Embryo Adoption Program. And at the same time, you know, this was all happening, my biological family was trying to place 20 frozen embryos for adoption through Focus on the Family. And the late Dr. James Dobson, he's my godfather. He was kind of the one that brought both of our families together and initiated the first frozen embryo adoption, which was me and my 19 siblings.
Wow, that is incredible. And so this program, which some of our listeners may be familiar with, and it was the first frozen embryo adoption program, what did that create that was new at the time?
At the time, there's just really traditional adoption programs. There's domestic, international, foster to adopt. And so Snowflake's embryo adoption, that's a trademark name, Snowflakes with Nightlight, Christian Adoptions, created that adoptive moms can adopt and give birth to their child. And that's kind of a dream come true for women who are experiencing infertility but can still carry a child to experience pregnancy. And that's a pretty big deal for a lot of families. And I've just heard that it's been such a miracle.
Wow. And so, so traditional adoption, obviously, is the child is already born and is either a baby or, you know, later on in life. My younger brother, actually, as listeners know, was adopted when he was 2 years old and came into our family. So that's more traditional mm-hmm. adoption. But then the mm-hmm. snowflake babies, as this term has come to mean, is the embryo itself and the life of the child at that stage of life is adopted and then implanted into the birth mom. And so you were saying that you and 19 of your siblings were all adopted?
Yes, from my biological family. So embryo adoption is just traditionally 9 months earlier than you traditionally adopt. So you still go through the home study, the background check, your family is vetted, the adoption agency matches you with a biological family that's placing embryos, see if you guys are a good fit. And then the placing family is the one that ultimately decides if they want to place their embryos with that family, just like how a birth mom would choose who she would place her child with.
Wow. And this gives, obviously, the embryos a chance at life. And so the purpose of adopting out, obviously, is to birth the embryos. And so you mention on your X page that only you and three of your siblings are actually alive now. So what happened ultimately to the 19 of the embryos?
Yeah, so it's a lot for a human being to be frozen and then thawed and then transferred into the mom and then survive a full-term pregnancy. That's a lot for a human being to undertake. And so those statistics are pretty general, actually. And so a lot of families, you know, they might adopt embryos and they do give those embryos a chance at life instead of remaining indefinitely frozen, discarded, or used for research. That's life affirming, but there's no guarantee you'll get pregnant or carry the baby full term.
Yeah, and that that unfortunately happens often with IVF and is part of the reason that so many, I don't like to use the term excess, but that's, you know, one of the medical terms that they use, excess embryos are created because often not all that are created, even if they're implanted, ultimately then develop fully and are born. And so mm-hmm. So this is part of the reason that often a lot of times the embryos that are frozen and the reason for that, and I would love to know if you know the reason that the 19 of you were frozen is because then the birth mom or the biological mom had other embryos that ultimately came to full term and then said, okay, we are at the family that we wanted. And so we then have these extra embryos. And so when did you understand, you know, what was the reason that you were adopted out? Was it that or some other story of why there were 19 of you that then were adopted out?
Yeah, so I think you already explained it. It's just, you know, my biological family was done creating their family. They had two homegrown blessings, and then they had the three created through IVF, and then they were done because then they got pregnant immediately after with their fifth child. And so at that point, they have all of these remaining frozen embryos, and they can't parent all of them realistically. And so that's why we were placed for adoption. But yeah, I think it's still a very life-affirming thing to do. But the clinics, like if you talk to an embryologist or an IVF doctor, they would tell you the same thing, that creating one embryo at a time is a lot harder because the statistics aren't as good. So if you create more embryos and you fertilize all of those eggs, create more embryos, then you have more chance of a successful pregnancy or successful transfer and thus have you.
Yeah. And so, you know, with this kind of background, and I appreciate you sharing so much about this story, I want to get into then your personal connection and understanding with this story and how this has framed your understanding of not only IVF, the pro-life debate, embryo adoption, and so forth. When did you first fully understand your own story?
Well, I sat in my dad's lap while my mom testified before Congress when I was just 2 years old, when we were talking about embryonic stem cell research. And I stood behind President George W. Bush while he made his first veto against embryonic stem cell research. And I was just 5 or 6 at that time. And so this has been a topic that has been on my heart from a very young age. Like, I very much understood what those frozen lives meant. Like, they are human lives. And on X, you know, I spend day after day arguing with people that don't even know basic biology. Like, an embryo isn't alive. An embryo isn't a human. And so it's just so much easier to justify the opposite, like what is untrue, than to justify the truth. Like, these are human lives, because then people have to sit with that ethical conundrum of like, well, what do we do? You know?
Yeah.
And people think that I see embryo adoption as like a, oh, well, we can keep creating embryos and doing IVF if we have embryo adoption. It's like, well, that's not necessarily what I'm saying either. It's just like, embryo adoption is an answer to a crisis.
Yeah. And so, you know, your story puts a face to the hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions of frozen embryos worldwide. And an adoption of embryos is obviously more ethical, more just, more life-affirming than keeping them frozen or simply discarding them, which is abortion medically and biologically. Do you think that our society has reckoned honestly with the moral implications, though, of creating more embryos than will ever be implanted, or in your case, than the biological family ultimately wanted?
I think when families or couples go to IVF clinics and they're saying, hey, we want a baby, you know, you're so stuck in that mindset of just like, oh, I'm going to get that baby I always dreamed of. I'm going to finally get to be able to hold that baby, and it's going to look like me and my husband. And so I think sometimes the IVF doctors kind of take advantage of, you know, your hormones and just where you are mentally, and just like, oh, I really want this baby. And you don't really think of the implications of there being more embryos, especially when people already don't see embryos as human life. And so I'm fighting an uphill battle, because to even explain my story and what an embryo is, I have to go back to basic biology and teach basic biology lessons, which also help support the pro-life movement. But also there's another movement, which is supporting these frozen embryos that nobody seems to want to give a voice to.
Mm-hmm. And you're giving an amazing voice to them, because you're able to have a voice because you were born and not aborted and not remaining frozen. I mean, I can't imagine that kind of alternative where we as a society think it's okay to just have these lives that are created and then sit in a frozen state for years, you know, perhaps ever. There was an article recently within the last year or so, I don't know if you saw it, that the oldest frozen embryo, I think, was frozen in the early 90s. That child was finally born through adoption. And so then, of course, the ethical question becomes, well, this is obviously in our perception terms, this child has just been born, but really the embryo is over 30 years old. And so mm-hmm. those questions of ethics, how do you wrestle with that from a Christian perspective, a pro-life perspective, and understanding that there are still so many embryos that that have no voice, unlike you, that now thankfully does?
Yeah, I think you're talking about Thaddeus. He was actually adopted through my same program, and I think he's actually older than his adopted parents, technically, because he was created before both of them. which is just so crazy to even think about. I was frozen for 2 years and over 30 years. It's just mind-boggling. But I think a lot of people really struggle. Like, I'm getting a lot of questions on X of, like, what are your thoughts about IVF? And, you know, the Catholic Church does not support IVF whatsoever. And there are some Catholics that don't even support embryo adoption. And so if you're putting something of not you and your husband into the woman's body. And so that's been really hard from just a Christian perspective, too, to support embryo adoption, because embryo adoption is life-affirming. I also think that a lot of people don't agree with me, that I do think IVF can be done ethically and morally and from a Christian perspective, but it takes a lot more regulation, and people aren't willing to listen to me about that either.
Yeah, and I would agree with you that it can be done ethically if the intention is to only create embryos that you will use. And use is such a terrible term there, because it sounds so commodification, consumerist driven. But if you are creating the children, then just like pregnancy, you know, if you're going to have a situation where conception can occur, then you are saying, I'm going to affirm the life of the child, and I'm going to take this full term, if, you know, unless something natural, unfortunately and tragically, happens. And so I agree with you, mm-hmm. that IVF can be done ethically, but most of the time, that's not how IVF is used. And so what concerns you the most about the normalization of over a consumption of embryo creation and destruction or indefinite freezing?
Yeah, I mean, we have an orphan crisis on our hands, Jenna, not just even like with frozen embryos, because that is a significant number of just 1.5 million estimated in the United States alone. That's not talking about other countries. And of course, we have orphans here in our country that have been born and are living in orphanages or foster care. So I don't want to neglect them either. But if we continue to use IVF the way that we are currently doing, that number is only going to increase and increase, and more lives will be lost. And so, yes, I think it can be done ethically. I think if you're creating one embryo at a time and immediately transferring, no freezing of children ever, not using donor egg or donor sperm, and not doing any ICSI, which is the intracytoplasmic sperm injection, where the IVF doctors are actually injecting the sperm into the egg, I think that's taking it far beyond playing God, right? I think it can be done ethically and we can avoid this, but people aren't even willing to hear that part either, which has been extremely difficult to preach and teach to other people.
Yeah. What in your experience has been the main objections from people, and why they're not willing to listen to your story and the answers to the ethical questions that surround it?
I mean, just this past week, I've been called crazy, been told I need therapy, and that I have all this manufactured trauma. And as a therapist myself, it's like, I'm not manufacturing trauma by sharing my story. Like, that's not what I'm doing. And I think a lot of people, like, there's been people being like, oh, well, freezing's okay. And it's like, well, really, it's not, because I lost almost all my siblings to freezing. Not just freezing alone, but that's a big part of it. And then people just not understanding basic, like, high school biology of when the egg and sperm come together, that's a new human life. And people really struggle to understand that embryos are humans. And that goes back to the pro-life debate that we've been, you know, trying to save babies from for a long time. Of, like, if we can't acknowledge an embryo in the womb as human life, how are people going to conceptualize an embryo outside of the womb?
Yeah. Yeah. And your story raises that exact question, that if embryos are human beings, and they are, then the question becomes, what responsibilities do we have toward the frozen embryos already in existence, and our understanding of IVF and the creation of new embryos that will be intended to be frozen if they're not desired to be used in the future. And so this challenges the modern idea that children are just products of adult desire rather than gifts mm-hmm. from God. And your question, or your story rather, also raises that question. Do you think that your biological parents used IVF unethically?
I don't feel like that's for me to say. Like, you know, we're all going to have to stand before God someday and testify to what we did or didn't do, right? And so that's not for me to judge that, because I also am very thankful for my life and the platform that I now have to advocate. And if I wasn't created, because I think every child also created through IVF is a blessing, and I don't feel like people should be shamed for having gone through IVF either, because I feel like infertility is a very heavy and sensitive subject for so many people and very shameful. And so I feel like they did the best with what they could in the situation that they were put in by an unregulated IVF industry. And we were just kind of the products of that.
Yeah. And that makes sense as a reaction, because you wouldn't be here otherwise. And there are, mm-hmm. you know, millions of children that wouldn't be here otherwise. And yet you're advocating for some moral and ethical boundaries, because there are still children that are in a frozen state. And so how do you personally wrestle with that conundrum and that ethical issue, understanding that what you're advocating for, which I believe is theologically correct and right, applied to your situation, might have not resulted in your life? And I know that that is that's an impossibility in terms of a question, because God always knew and he foreknew. And the Bible says that, you know, he knows us before we are even formed in the womb. Mm-hmm. So it's an impossible question, but it's also one of ethics that, you know, you're arguing for something that would have directly affected you, which I think is admirable, by the way.
Yes. Thank you. You know, I think Jeremiah 1:5 is our family verse, and so I think God had a plan well underway to advocate for these frozen embryos with my story. And so it just kind of feels like if I was given this chance at life, like a 1 in 19 or 20 chance, like that's pretty tremendous. I have a life worth giving back to the Lord and advocating for those remaining lives. And I think it's heartbreaking that I even have to be doing this. And I feel like it's heartbreaking that there's so many people that, you know, choose abortion on the day-to-day basis or choose to destroy their embryos. But, you know, this orphan crisis that we have, like these parents that are creating these embryos with IVF were faced with this decision: if they pass away, their children are then going to have to decide what to do with their brothers and sisters. And so what is that creating for other families having to decide, like, oh, what do I do with my biological siblings that are in frozen storage that my parents have been paying for all these years? Like, that would be so incredibly hard to even make that decision. And so yeah. I think God has a plan, and we all are made in the image of God. And I think that he knows exactly what's going on, but his heart also breaks for all of his children that are in a frozen state, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, not that this is the same ethical question whatsoever, but in terms of the advocacy piece, I view your advocacy in this role in understanding how you're advocating for ethical boundaries that would have affected, you know, your very existence in the same way that, you know, children who were the product of a rape or incest, you know, that the way that perhaps of their conception raises ethical and in those cases criminal concerns that, you know, aren't present in IVF, but they still, of course, would advocate against things like rape or incest, and yet they would still advocate that if that happens, then there's already a conception and we have to be pro-life even in the midst of whatever circumstances occur during the conception. And so I don't see it mm-hmm. morally or ethically as as an inconsistency to say that, you know, we want to put some boundaries and some regulations and we have ethical and life concerns around frozen embryos and the creation of them through IVF, but then we still have to deal with those that are already created because those are lives. And having the frozen embryo adoption program is a wonderful life-affirming way to deal with that question and with all of those children. And so so if you could say one thing just directly to couples who are currently deciding what to do with their frozen embryos, or maybe they've just had them frozen for a few years and don't really want to think about it, what do you want them to hear?
You know, we're not in love with our egg and our sperm. We're in love with the child that results. And so I think that, you know, there are couples that are willing to adopt these babies and children, give them the gift of life. And I think that, you know, placing them for adoption is such a wonderful, wonderful thing. And open adoption is well underway. My family and I have an open adoption, and, you know, that door is always open if that child wants to seek out their biological family or their identity and kind of wrestle with that on their own. But I think it's such a wonderful and beautiful solution to these lives that have been created, and giving them that gift, I think, is so powerful.
And what would you, you know, finally, as we're having to wrap up here, and there's so much more, Hannah, that I could talk to you about, and I so appreciate you being willing to share your story, talk about your experience in your life, and what would you tell churches that, you know, maybe haven't done enough to address the ethics of frozen embryos and what we call, you know, reproductive technology, which is, you know, more of a clinical way of talking about it instead of saying life and the rights of children. Do you think that churches have avoided this topic and should do more?
I've really only heard the Catholic Church talk about it, and I'm not Catholic myself, but my church hasn't really even touched on this ever, and the only reason they have is because my family and I will advocate for it, you know, on Pro-Life Sunday or things like that, or we'll go speak. But I think, you know, the pro-life community is really divided on this issue right now, and I'm not sure even churches know where to stand, because the pro-life community is kind of, I wouldn't even say in half, because a lot of them say IVF is evil, let's ban it, no IVF, no IVF, no IVF, and I kind of am on the other side of, like, I think IVF can be done with these caveats or things avoided. And so people are so caught up in what the pro-life community is preaching, they're not willing to hear another point of view, and I think that's been really hard. So I would encourage churches to just, you know, do their research and study the texts and reach out to, you know, I'm pretty sure a lot of these churches have families that have adopted frozen embryos that would love to speak or provide insight to their church community. And I think that's where people need to be starting. We need to not be forming opinions. We need to be asking the children that were actually frozen. Let's ask them instead of policymakers and big pro-life leaders just forming their own opinions without having asked what an adopted frozen embryo thinks.
Yeah. And, you know, that's such a great point that so many churches don't address it because they don't even know where to start. And if churches are not providing the biblically correct worldview and framework of how to think through these issues, then families inevitably will do that on their own. And they may or may not arrive to the biblically correct decision. And they may either, you know, as you said, completely reject IVF because they've only heard the ways that it's not used ethically, or, you know, they may arrive at various conclusions or may even have concerns over adopting frozen embryos themselves, where, you know, if their pastor would walk them through that, then they could see what a wonderful gift and biblical gift that adoption is. And so I think that's a great message for pastors and for all of the pastors who are listening to this program. This is something that is part and parcel to the pro-life movement. And if we are truly pro-life in the way that the Bible commands, these issues, as difficult and complex as they are, can't be ignored. And that's why, Hannah, I'm so thankful that you came on today. And you're going to be part of a new documentary as well that's actually being produced by Grace Productions, which listeners will recognize as the same film studio that produced The Essential Church, which was our fight for the church staying open during COVID with Pastor John MacArthur and a few other churches. I know a lot of you watched that documentary. So they're in production of this new documentary, and you're part of that. So tell us about that documentary and the hope that you have for the impact of that.
Yeah, Frozen Orphans. You can watch the trailer on frozenorphans.org. My mom and I were in the trailer, and so I think it's just really important that somebody that has adopted a frozen embryo and then somebody who's actually frozen and adopted is taken into account into this documentary, because I feel like our voices get left out of the mix a lot of the time, and I think that's so huge. So I'm really honored to be part of this project and the advocacy. And I opened up my own nonprofit as well. It's called Wonderfully Made Adoption Services International. Mm-hmm. And then I'll also have like a counseling side too, to consult and counsel with families that have undergone IVF treatments or have remaining embryos or have adoption questions or identity questions about themselves, like birth moms, placing families, siblings of adoptees, et cetera. Just to have a place to support these families, because that's often overlooked in the adoption community too. Yeah. So I'm really excited to be pursuing that as my vocation here shortly.
That's incredible. And I love that you have used the unique identity that God has given you and the voice that God has given you to help other families and other adoptions, and to push for the biblical worldview of life. And so last question, when you mention, you know, helping others through, you know, questions of identity, you know, you've obviously made this your purpose and your ministry, which is amazing. And I love that. And I'm so thankful that you have turned this into something that you are pursuing because it is God-given. Did you ever have a time where you struggled with questions of identity or, you know, any of those things? I've seen a lot of people on your X feed, you know, ask about therapy and, you know, other things. It seems like, you know, we all have to go to therapy for something these days, but, you know, or at least yeah. According to them. And so, you know, how did you work through this personally, or was that never a question because of the way your parents raised you?
Yeah, the X community is really interesting with the therapy comments. I think everybody should be in therapy, and I'm not just saying that because I'm a therapist. I think therapy is wonderful. I think when we're in that psychosocial stage of development, when we're like teenagers, we're really kind of going through, who am I? What am I? Where did I come from? Who do I want to be? And that's like a normal high school experience. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I feel like that was just kind of part of that, of like, oh yeah, I have a biological family and that's where my genetics are from. But my parents poised this whole adoption process to me, or proposed it to me when I was so young, that they are my parents. They are my family. Like, I wouldn't trade them for the world. And so adoption is just a natural part of my life, and they got me involved with other adopted kids when I was growing up through our adoption agency. Like, I had friends that were adopted from China and Russia, or domestically, or through foster care. And so adoption was normal. And if you weren't adopted, it was kind of like, oh, that's weird. and so I think when we normalize things to our children, then we're like, oh, okay, adoption's normal, and adoption's not second best. And I think that's really important too.
Yeah, absolutely. And that your parents were upfront about it and told you, you know, this was the way that God allowed you to come into our family. And, you know, that's, and just like the Bible says, I mean, we are the adopted children of God. And that's a wonderful, actually, expression of the gospel message, how we come into a family through adoption and yet have the exact same rights and identity as the biological children of the family, and there's no difference there. And so, Hannah, I so appreciate, again, you being willing to share your story, your ministry, and people can follow you on X at Hannah Strege. It's H-A-N-N-A-H, and then the last name is S-T-R-E-G-E. And I love the comments that you have to all of your haters. You keep going and speaking boldly and doing your ministry for the glory of the Lord. And thank you again so much for coming on today.
Thank you so much for having me, Jenna.
All right. Well, what a powerful message for someone who is literally the face of frozen embryos. And, you know, I love that Hannah was able to come on and share her story. And this is one of the things that I think is such an amazing testament to her parents, that, you know, they were very upfront, as she mentioned at the end of the interview, that, you know, she was just always raised to know that these are my parents. This is my family. This is what God intended for my life. And parents can make such a difference and impact on how children understand our identity and relationship with Christ. And that has such an impact then on how we develop into adults, and then how we then become parents and our children think of themselves. And so it's always so important for parents, for aunts and uncles, for grandparents, and also, of course, for the pastors, to make sure that you understand this issue, you understand it biblically, and that you are encouraging each other and also families in your church who may be struggling with questions of infertility, questions about IVF, whether they want to use it themselves or adopt a frozen embryo. These are real questions that the church needs to address biblically and from a biblical worldview. So this is On Demand with Jenna Ellis, and we talk about these issues and more daily on my radio program, Jenna Ellis in the Morning, which is live from 8 to 9 Eastern each and every weekday morning. And then you can also listen to the podcast version after the fact. We post the full show online at afr.net. But share this episode with a friend, with your pastor, so that they can think about this and wrestle through these questions. And as always, if you have a question, an issue, or a guest that you'd like to for us to do a deep dive, you'd like to hear from here on demand, then you can always reach me and my team, Jenna at afr.net.